Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Again, it's my pleasure and delight to let you know that we have a rousing discussion on farms tonight. And regardless of your opinion on farms, everybody eats. So it affects us all, 100% of the listeners, unless you're a zombie. So let me move on with some of the exciting news. We have with us a very special guest, Julie Duff. We have seen so many constitutional amendments proposed, but usually the proponents and the opponents line up politically on the right or the left. They're either people who like bigger government or they're people who like smaller government. Tonight we've got an interesting topic because there's a proposal on our ballots here in Missouri next Tuesday, and it is torn apart, torn asunder, tortured, caused fistfights, and confused the masses. We have people who are on the right who both love it and hate it. We have people on the left who both love it and hate it. It kind of sounds like midwifery. So on rare occasions, we have an issue like this where Tea Party groups, grassroots groups, even HSUS, which does not enjoy a lot of credibility among those groups, is kind of with them on their opposition. Very odd. It all comes down to what you believe and your ability to imagine the future. We're all looking at the same words, but we're coming up with vastly different scenarios on what might happen as a result. So tonight we have some very special callers who are going to share with us from their perspective on what this farm bill is going to do for Missouri. Judy Dollarhite is one of the women who is on the forefront of explaining. Judy, I have a huge amount of respect for you. I've known you for a number of years. Tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us how you came to have a position on this farm amendment.
Well, thank you for having me, Cynthia. We reluctantly became involved in government after our battle with the USDA. That was our real wake-up call to what government can do to its people, and it was not a willing fight that we were under. And so since that time, we've attempted to educate ourselves about how government works and how these bills and regulations and amendments can affect the everyday citizen. And this is one that has been really difficult to digest and to piece apart. Everything originates with an intention. This one is one side is going to say it has good intentions. The other side is going to say it has evil intentions. On the intention of this amendment, I'm going to ride the fence because I'm undecided on the intention of the amendment. But on the actual amendment itself, I'm going to have to say for me and my family, it's a no for several reasons.
I just want to, again, introduce you a little bit to the audience. How I learned about you was when I was in the Missouri State Legislature, and I heard this story of this sweet family doing a little rabbit experiment in the backyard and how the big federal government came in and shut down your rabbit operation and find you. And the part that amazed me the most was not over the injustice, but the lack of responsiveness from the elected officials. Now, you and I are just lay people. I'm no longer in the legislature, but there's a point, is there not, where you expect the professionals to get involved and sort it out for us? So in this case, with this amendment, the professional legislators put it on the ballot. There are two ways in Missouri to put things on the ballot. One is with the people signing a petition, and the other way is when the legislators themselves do it. And generally, the outcome is much better when the legislators do it because they're up there for months of the year trying to sort through. Explain to us, you are not a legislator, but yet you came to the idea that this is a bad idea. How is it possible that lay people know more than the legislators?
Starting to wake up a little bit. With the onset of Obamacare, that we have to pass it before we find out what's in it. I think that quote has probably awakened the masses, and people are starting to question a little bit more. We need to question a lot more. My husband and I have been watching this for the last couple of years. A couple of years ago, there was some words in this proposed amendment at that time that modern farming, that was a huge point of contention, and we and several other people felt like that was a direct hit at the Amish and Mennonite communities. After much arguing and arm wrestling, that was removed from the final amendment. But we had a meeting, and we spoke with Representative Reibolt, and with who's sponsored this amendment, and also with Kelly Smith of Farm Bureau. And we really sat hard on those guys and asked some very hard questions. We really didn't get clear-cut answers. We did really push with Mr. Reibolt, did you write this? Did you personally write it? And after about three ways and three different people of asking the question, we finally got an answer of no. And so there, and he really wanted to keep modern, he admitted, in the amendment.
So the amendment originally, Judy, the amendment originally said that there's a right to farm as long as it's modern farming?
There was the modern technology was the terminology that was in the original, and that did not sit well with much of the Missourians, and ultimately that was taken out. And here's another problem, and I think both sides are having a little bit of trouble. If the entire amendment was the ballot language, I don't think anybody could argue that would be a yes vote, but it isn't. And the point of contention for most of us on the no side is that phrase, subject to duly authorized powers, if any. That's the elephant in the room for most people. And it's been difficult to sort out just exactly who those duly authorized powers. And ultimately, Mr. Reibolt stated, well, that will probably be determined by the courts. Now, there are people that are saying that it's local elected officials. That may be the case, but it's not necessarily limited to those individuals. And there are counties that have charters in Missouri. There's four, is my understanding now. A charter county has a little bit different take on certain authorities in regards to farming, health departments, and things like that. So what may be in one county may not necessarily be in another county. And when you have the entire state voting on an amendment and it may not be true for one county to the other, that's a problem.
Judy, I ran into this problem when I tried to pass a parental rights law, and it really was remarkably simple. It just said, it's the natural and fundamental right of parents and legal guardians to direct the health care, upbringing, an education of their children. And I thought it was exquisite. I thought it was perfect. I couldn't imagine how we could improve upon it. But
I agree.
The problem I got into was when we had a hearing and there were people who said, you can't grant the power to educate and control all facets of healthcare and upbringing of their children to the parents, because what about the pathology? What about the lousy parents? And what if somebody stands on this amendment and says, no, we have the right to raise our children? So then a clause was added, unless there's a compelling state interest. Well, that basically ruined the whole thing, because if there is a compelling state interest, you can make that up to be anything you dream of it to be. I'm sure the Nazis in Germany had the same thought. The state needs your children. We're doing experiments. We have a compelling interest for taking them.
Precisely.
So I understand the farming amendment probably started off with we have a right to farm. Where they ruined it was with the second sentence about unless the local authorities say otherwise, which why are we even going to pass it then if we're actually saying you really don't have a right to farm?
Correct. And those that argue for this state that those duly authorized powers already exist, which they do. And if that's the case, then why do we need the amendment? If it isn't the case, are we opening up for another can of worms that the unintended consequences? It's something that is very difficult to look into your crystal globe and see which entity is going to take which part and run with it. And that's the part, you know, there's been all kinds of accusations about, you know, the HSUS pushing this, and the other side's going to say, well, corporate farming is going to push out the little guy. And, you know, I will say, looking at those that are backing this, it does concern me. It is very large corporations, Monsanto and Cargill and Smithfield Foods. That's concerning to me. Is there a place for corporate farming? Yes. But there's also a place for the small farmer and the home gardener. And I personally don't want to have to appeal to my county commissioner or my city government or my county and say, I would like to plant a garden in my backyard. May I please do that? If you read subject to duly authorized powers, that could be an unintended or an intended consequence of this amendment.
Well, Judy, just so we can get everybody on the same page here, there are probably a lot of people in our vast listening audience who are not familiar with the ballot language and what it's going to do. So let me read this to you. This amendment is going to be inserting into the Missouri Constitution a new section, and the new section will go in the Bill of Rights. For those who have never read our Constitution, we have a Missouri Bill of Rights, just like the U.S. Constitution has its Bill of Rights. And
yes.
So when you put something in the Bill of Rights, you are making a very strong statement. This is what they're wanting to insert. The agriculture, which provides food, energy, health benefits, and security, is the foundation and stabilizing force of Missouri's economy. To protect this vital sector of Missouri's economy, the right of farmers and ranchers to engage in farming and ranching practices shall be forever guaranteed in this state, subject to duly authorized powers, if any, conferred by Article 6 of the Constitution of Missouri. Now, here's a big red flag. Obviously, if they had stopped before they got to subject to duly authorized powers, then that means they're carte blanche, allowed to do anything they want, including dumping pig sewage into the creeks and doing things that are going to be disadvantageous. Okay, so we can understand in a bigger sense why we have some regulations. Here's the question, and you may not be the expert on where our rights come from, but there are a lot of people who have read the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution and have made statements that all people are created equal and have certain unalienable rights, that being life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And I don't disagree with it. But then there are people who say our rights don't come from the Constitution. Our rights come from God. Well, if the rights don't come from the Constitution, why do you have to put in the Constitution a right, and it says the right of farmers and ranchers to engage in farming and ranching practices shall be forever guaranteed. Now, forever is a very long time. And we all love them farming and ranching. I'm a little confused about not the idea behind it, but is it going to be deceptive, and is the state now going to be granting a right to farm? Because that is, in fact, the title of the amendment. What are your thoughts on rights?
Well, the part about the rights of farmers and ranchers, there's been a lot of debate and a lot of discussion about has that been clearly defined? Yes and no. There is a case that most people point to that states that a farmer must produce at least $1,000 a year of product that is sold. That's a case law. It isn't really defined and on the books. So, you know, what is a farmer? What is a rancher? Will that be defined at some point that maybe you have to have X amount of acres to be considered a farmer or a rancher? Is the home gardener considered a farmer? As my husband said, up until not that long ago, we were all farmers because everyone grew their own food. That's not so now. And so those definitions, as in a right, that's a slippery slope. And I think that's where a lot of people are up in arms and concerned. And when it all comes down to it, when you're changing the Constitution, which is a very big change, this is not something that should be taken lightly. Most people, when in doubt, err on the side of no. And that's frankly where, that's the position we're taking. Not because in any way do we not want to defend farmers. I'm a farm girl. My parents were farmers. Their parents were farmers. We have to have our farmers. We have to have our ranchers. We have to have people that can produce our food. And, yes, we need certain environmental protections in place for the good of everybody. No one, I don't believe, is arguing that. It's how do we accomplish it? How do we protect the industry of Missouri as well as the property owner, the small producer? That's where this is coming down, that I think it was poorly written. The intentions might have been good, but when it's not a solid protective change to the Constitution, it needs to be thrown out. And that's the side that we're standing on for a protection of everyone. What I find really odd about this particular amendment, both sides are saying they want the exact same thing. And they're both stating that their vote is how to get that accomplished. I'm pretty well standing in the middle stating, you know, I'd like to see everything that the yes side is stating come true. I'm not real comfortable with the wording. I'm not comfortable with something having to go to court and someone having to defend their ability to raise XYZ crop or their animals. I'm not comfortable with risking the livelihood that we have now and the ability that we have now on a maybe this will make things better. It's a slippery slope.
and I've taken a lot of heat, and I've been called some pretty nasty names, being disloyal, people that stood up for you during your rabbit case and you turn your back. That is not the case at all. I will stand with anyone that is being attacked by the government trying to make a living and raise their family and support their family. However, this, as you stated, anybody that eats, this is about all of us. This isn't about political parties. This isn't about certain groups that may have a hidden agenda. This is about our food, and we can't afford to get this wrong.
Well, Judy, let me tell you my story. Mine wasn't as bad as your rabbit case, but several years ago, I had a child who called my city government and spoke with a department head, said to the person, I would like to get chickens. Is there any ordinance in the city of O'Fallon that prevents us from getting chickens? And the city staff told her no, that is fine. So we got the chickens. It was very fun. This was one of the best science experiments we ever had done. It lasted for over 2 years. We ordered them on the internet. They came through the post office, went up there, and we actually had gone through several flocks of 25 before we figured out how to help them live.
Sure.
But we've
trial
finally
and error.
Yeah, trial and error. But we had done this for a while, and it was actually a very educational experience until I ran for a state Senate position. And at that time, you know, if you put your name on the ballot, you're opening yourself up to opposition, and all it takes are a few people who don't like your political philosophy to make your life miserable. So somebody did complain, and the city of O'Fallon gave us the famous letter that said you have only a few days, 10 days, I believe, to get rid of your chickens, or we'll shut you down. I was sorely disappointed, not in the question of whether I can have chickens or not. That wasn't the issue. The issue was that my own city government taught my children a lesson that the law is however you want to interpret it, depending on who it applies to. So this is why we should all have shutters right here. Why are we going to put something in the law that is so vague that it can be interpreted either way, depending on who is the judge? We are letting judges and juries in this
That's
country
right.
make up the laws as they go. And this is what should scare us. So we have an amendment in front of us. It doesn't say what a farmer is or what a rancher is. It says they have a right to do stuff, but not if the local government says no. So what actually have we accomplished?
Right, and that's the slippery slope, and you're right. Depending on the person, their ability to hire effective counsel, depending on the judge they go before, depending on a past history with either that particular judge or that particular jury or ordinance, city, whatever it happens to be, it's a dangerous position to be put in, and when the entire state is voting upon it, but again, it's going to come down to various local authorities, it won't all be created equal, and in some instances, it can't be because of the land and the use, and I understand that, and I'm sure you do as well, but it is a slippery slope, and it's putting ourselves in a position of uncertainty, and that's the big objection. I don't think anybody out here is wanting to shoot down a farmer and their ability to grow their crops and to you know, be able to safely farm and produce as they've done in the past. And we're all aware there are certain areas, the smells of farming is not always pleasant. And I really feel for people that are next to those concentrated animal feeding organizations that get to smell that wasn't there when they bought their property. Many of them many, many years prior, and someone else buys property next to them, and suddenly there's 40,000 pigs next door. I really feel for those people. And that's why it is important to protect property values and those types of things. It's tough. It's a tough situation. What's fair to the new owner to be able to do the business? What's fair to the existing owners that their property values not be degraded? But I don't believe that this particular amendment is what we need in Missouri. I don't know that agriculture and farming is being attacked in Missouri to the point that we need a constitutional amendment. Our Bill of Rights in Missouri, Section 2, Point 2, pretty well gives us, and just as you stated, all persons have a natural right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and the enjoyment of the gains of their own industry. If that doesn't really apply to farming, I don't know what does. You know, it goes on to say, you know, various things, but it says that when the government, I'll go ahead and read it, that all persons are created equal and entitled to equal rights and opportunity under the law, that to give scrutiny to those things is the principal office of government, and that when government does not confer the security, it fails in its chief design. Well, to me, this particular amendment does not confer the security, and it's failing in its chief design. And so when we're adding something to our Constitution, in one section it gives us this right, in another section it takes it away. Which section do we fall under? This is failing in its chief design, in my eyes.
In my chicken story, the way it ended up is the definition section is what got us. Because the city of O'Fallon had a prohibition against anybody having farm animals. What is a pet? Is it a farm animal? So that's what changed. They said, well, a farm animal is any animal that can be found on a farm. Huh. Well, anything can be found on a farm.
That could be a dog as well, and I'm sure there was no ordinance against dogs.
Right. So we ended up feeling very disappointed. I guess the sad part for me is I wanted my children to learn a science experiment, and instead they got a civics lesson. And the civics lesson was that when your government says they're going to shut you down, nothing else matters. They can manipulate any wording, any definition to mean anything. So it looks like we've got Cindy Redburn joining us tonight. Cindy, do you want to weigh in on the farm amendment?
Hi, Cynthia. Yeah, I'm calling just for that purpose, and I've been sitting here listening to, and I'm assuming that was Julie Dollarhite?
Yes, Julie Dollarhite,
yes, okay.
The woman whose legacy goes.
Yes. Yes, do an excellent job of explaining the problems with this amendment. I'm not too sure I can even add anything to what she said except just reaffirm that I have the same qualms about this. I went to a meeting last week in Clayton with a group of legislators, former legislator, and a couple other people who were there to basically put on a forum so that people could ask questions. And interestingly, not expected, but the sponsor of this, the Representative Guernsey, from the northwest part of our state was there. So I thought, well, this is an excellent opportunity to find out exactly what it is and how this amendment, this very vaguely worded amendment that isn't even necessary as far as I'm concerned, could protect us. And so I specifically asked concerning the local authority language in there. And if he could explain to me how that was going to work. And so he proceeded to tell this story about the county next to him. I believe he said it was Livingston County, how the county had passed such strict regulations to to deal with the carpet farmers, and I know that that area up there in a part in our state is really a lot of carpet farmers up there. How it was so strict to regulate them that it ended up basically regulating and driving out all livestock operations in that county because of the regulations that the county authorities had it had passed. And so I'm sitting there thinking as he's explaining this to me, and I said, well, then how will this protect us? If the county, if it's coming under the authority of the local county authorities, how then does this amendment do anything to protect us? And, you know, I couldn't even make any sense of what his answer. Somehow or other, this is going to magically protect us from that happening. But yet, the way I read the language, it says that the county local authority has that right to regulate. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just not understanding this. But the way I look at this point, there is so much confusion and misinformation about this. No one has been able to explain to me yet how this will actually protect Missouri farmers and ranchers. And so I just have to stand firm with, you know, the reasons that we went within the Constitution Party, and all those reasons are listed on our website, this is bad legislation, and we should be voting against it.
Well, thank you for that explanation, Cindy. I also went and heard this discussion last week in my community with several legislators and former legislators who were there to help enlighten us and make sense out of it. What was interesting about it for me is I came with a very open mind, not convinced either way, wanting to just listen to their arguments. When I left, there was something that one of the proponents said that convinced me that I need to vote against it. Now, I don't want to make him feel bad because that won't help. That won't help our relationship. And Judy, you already talked about your relationship with other people, so who, you know, get really huffy when we disagree. But what confused me before I went is I was asking the same question everyone else was asking, what difference will it make? And I came away convinced that it will not make a difference. Well, guess what, folks? If it's not going to make a difference, then why are we going around changing our Constitution? And then the second thing that convinced me was when I heard him say the major corporations don't have a problem with complying with whatever regulations they want to come up with. It's the little guys who can't handle all the tough regulations. You can't.
Precisely.
Yeah. And I just want to tell you one more story in case you want to hear this one. I own most of my listeners know that my husband and I own a Christian bookstore. Now, we're independent. We've owned it for 26 years. We know what we're doing. But if it comes to more regulations, it's going to hurt me, the little guy, much more than it's going to hurt Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble is big enough that they can handle anything their government puts on them. I'm the one struggling. And one proof of this, I got a business census from our federal government, and they wanted me to itemize what percentage of my inventory is hardcover, what percentage is paperback, how many comic books I sell. And I'm like, folks, I don't identify my book inventory based on how it's bound. That would cause a horrific hardship on me. I don't go and measure how many are paper and how many are hard. There are a lot of books that come out the same title, both hardcover and paperback. So why would I want to put my hardship, why would my government want to put this hardship on me that's a huge deal when the big boys can comply with no problem, they probably do have their inventory identified by binding. This is my own personal story, and I'm explaining it to you because when any legislator comes to me and says we can change the law, and they can, every time they're in session, we should all be nervous because they can do anything they want. So this is the question, both of you ladies. How do we govern ourselves in a manner where the government is subject to us and we're not causing new hardships on ourselves by bringing it about with new laws?
Well, the answer I would have is people have to get involved. Since our rabbit case, I've been to more public meetings, more city council type meetings, more county commissioner meetings. Been to Jeff City a few times. I'm constantly away from home watching and learning and asking questions. And Cynthia, I remember you saying when you were a legislator, you made a lot of enemies because you asked questions and you asked for clarification. And folks don't like that. But that's what we need to be doing, whether it's our local school board meeting and they're talking about curriculum, or if it's our city government and they're talking about putting in a new utility and what that would mean for the community. It's time to get off the couch and stop sitting in front of the TV watching mindless garbage and find out what's going on in our, because these people are people we elect, but most people, if you ask, hey, who's running for school board, do you know any of the people? Oh, I've never heard of them. Or, no, I don't know who's on city council. Or if they have a problem, they come to maybe one or two people that they know go to those meetings or they know are involved. I'm sure people ask you, Cynthia, all the time, I have this problem. Who handles that? Who do I need to go to? And you become the go-to person, and that's a little frustrating because I would like to sit at home with my family and have a quiet dinner and not go to these meetings, but I feel like it's a duty to my children for their future that I go and find out and try to fight for what's right and try to be educated and to vote the right way. We all get a vote, but when you're not educating yourself, you don't know what you're voting for. It's those unintended consequences that bite us in the backside, and this is one that I feel has, this is our food, people. This is our food. It's a lot of folks' livelihood, but it's our food, and we really need to get this right. And I just can't say enough how passionate I feel. People have got to read and educate and understand words have meanings. And this was proposed in about 10 other states, very, very similar, if not identical, wording. Missouri is not unique. It's already passed in Michigan, and we've spoken with people in Michigan, and they're not happy.
Why are they not? Yeah, tell me about Michigan.
Well, there are some folks that had backyard chickens, backyard rabbit hutches, and once their right to farm legislation was passed, now the local authorities more than likely still had the same authority in regulating that, but maybe they weren't aware they could regulate that. And now that this passed, there were people that maybe lived right on the outskirts of the city or right within the city limits that had backyard rabbits or chickens, and the neighbor, I don't like them, I don't want them to have it, it's ugly, and they complain, and now they're regulated out. And so they're not happy that it's passed. And there's consequences. Anytime you pass something, there's consequences. And so from what I've read in other states that have passed this, they're not happy that they've done so. And I hate to see Missouri. This is my lifelong home. I was born and raised here. I've spent my entire life in Christian County. This worries me a great deal. It really does. Of all the amendments, this one is the one that scares me the most.
Judy, let me talk to you about the national government versus the state governments, because when you had your crisis with the government trying to shut down your children's rabbit operation and punish you with a hefty penalty, was that not the national government that did that to you?
It was federal, and really our state, we never broke any interstate commerce. We did not sell out of state. The state government should have protected us, and they didn't. And without the good people of Missouri and all over, without some social media, without a blog that got our story out and people riled and outraged, hey, if it can happen to them, it can happen to me. Without phone lines and emails and fax machines being jammed at both the state level, the local level, and the federal level, we would not have had the outcome that we got. I'm firm in that belief. But because it was so ridiculous and the fine was so ridiculous that it struck a nerve with the general public. And for that, I'm thankful for everybody that called and wrote letters and complained. But it's very difficult to fight the feds. It's even difficult to fight your state. But you can have an impact locally with who's on your school board, who's on your city council. These are people you know, you go to church with, you work with, you went to high school with. Those are things that, to me, it starts, our government's supposed to be from the bottom up, not the top down, but it often doesn't seem that way. And when we go to county commissioner meetings, so many times I've heard a commissioner say, well, we don't have any choice. This is coming from the top down. We do have a choice. We can say no. And when you got that survey from the government wanting to know how many paperbacks and all that kind of stuff, just say no. What are they going to do? Just say no. And people don't say no. And when something as ridiculous as that, it doesn't matter. You've paid your taxes on your inventory. It doesn't matter if it's a paperback or a magazine or whatever. It's bogging us down, and we need to learn to say no.
Do you think that the proponents of this amendment are feeling like it will protect Missouri from the encroachment of the national government?
I don't know. I really feel that it's more than meets the eye. Looking at who's backing it, it's some pretty large corporations. I can't help but feel like they think they will be a little more protected and can, you know, one bigger corporation pushes out a smaller corporation and there's less competition. I personally think competition is good. I would prefer we not have Monsanto and GMO food in Missouri, but we've got it. And the big boys tend to get where the money is the way things usually fly. And this is a concern of mine. I just feel like it's not something for my family I'm willing to risk.
Good going.
I don't.
Yeah, we've got a caller who might have a question that might be valuable to us. So I'm going to see if we can go ahead and, are you up for taking a few phone calls?
Sure.
Okay. And let's see, who's on the line with us? Go ahead.
Randy, Constitutional Evangelist Stubblebeam.
Oh, what a thrill to hear from you, Randy. Is there a comment? Missouri is, let me explain how these amendments work. I, being a former legislator, had many experiences when I would go to conferences and they would propose stock laws. I know, Judy, you were wanting to believe that everybody just thinks up this brilliance, but not to burst your bubble, but most legislators aren't that bright. And
right.
They're not brighter. not brighter than the regular voting public, at least, like they'd want you to believe. And so when you go to these conferences, it's very common for them to promote one law that then metastasizes and goes all over the country. If you come up with a great idea, chances are that other states have already tried it. We've got 50 live experiments. So I'm guessing with what you said that things, what happens in Missouri is not limited to Missouri. It did start somewhere else, and it's going to continue spreading. So, Randy, tell us your opinion on the Farm Bill.
Well, I got to tell you, I've been listening, and bravo to all of you and the points that you are making. I absolutely agree. There's only one, really, a couple of things that comments that I'd like to make. And, you know, one of the things that you just said, you know, about the legislators are not brighter than the voting republic, and that's because these legislators are coming from the voting public, and which is a segue to a point that I want to make, is I am a strong advocate. You know, you've heard me many times challenge people to get involved, and absolutely that's what we want. We want people to get involved. But the problem is, it's kind of just like with our legislators. If they're not educated in terms of what it means to be constitutional and what the Constitution is designed for and the protections that the Constitution provides for its people, then, you know, you're no better off with people who have no clue and are swayed to these people's positions. So, you know, one of the things, and I think you're doing a great job here, is people have to be educated about what it means for these things to happen. Like you use the term, it's a slippery slope. Well, what does that mean? Where does that slippery slope take us? And, you know, that's one of the things that we've really got to focus our attention on, is educating those people around us. Yes, absolutely, we need to inspire and get people to just show up. And quite frankly, I've used this phrase many times, and I'm sure that every one of you that are on this call and that listen to this, if you've ever showed up to either a municipal meeting or a county meeting, just the fact that you showed up will change the conversation, because so many of these meetings, nobody is showing up, so these legislators at whatever level are never held accountable for the decisions that they make. And so it's certainly very important for people just to show up, but it's also
absolutely right.
Yeah, and then it's also important that you know, people have a clue about, you know, some of these issues, and so we've really got to, you know, put it in our plate to help educate these people. And I just wanted to make that point, is that, you know, you can invite people to show up, but if they have no clue, they're as dangerous as the legislators who are trying to, you know, stab us in the back.
You're right, Randy, and the worst part of it is that so many people look to others to get their opinion. What we're finding is that really is what motivates people who to vote for and how to vote on an issue. Well, how is my neighbor voting? I get phone calls and customers who come in every day, the day before an election, asking me what I think they should do. And I don't mind the question. I love the fact that people care enough to at least be informed, but if, let's say it this way. There were a lot of times when I knocked doors. In fact, this is the first time in 20 years that my name has not been on the ballot. So I've done more door knocking than any of the rest of you panelists on here tonight. And it always amazed me that every now and then I'd knock on a door where somebody would say, I'm going to vote for you because I always vote for the woman. And I'm like, wait a second. That's the most intelligent reason to vote for me. I didn't earn your vote. Another thing I would hear frequently, people would call and say, I'll vote for you because you have an R after your name. Well, that's not the right reason either. There are plenty of people who have a letter next to their name, and that was, you know, what he was saying is, I always vote for the Republican. What he needed to say is, I always vote for the one who earns my vote, and that's all it ever should be. So, yeah, I was disappointed. There were a few times when I felt cheated. I'm like, wait a minute, you didn't give me a chance to make my case. We have to make our case. And if this farm amendment is such a good idea, let them make their case. I walked out of my meeting last week saying they didn't make the case. So we have another person who's joining us tonight. It looks like from St. Louis. David, is that you?
Hi, Cynthia?
Yeah, weigh in on the farm amendment.
Yes, this is Dave Usher. For folks who may not know me, I've been very involved in drafting of legislation, very familiar with constitutional and other kinds of law. And in my analysis, this Amendment 1 is a no vote with two capital letters in it. And here are the reasons why. Is first of all, it does not enumerate any protections. Just saying that there's a right to farming without specifying what those rights constitute means that it makes it meaningless. And then by subverting it to Article 6 of the Missouri Constitution, what they're doing is actually creating an automatic preferential constitutional right for local governments to control farms as a matter of a constitutional right, which makes it that much harder to say no to local local governments when they want to do something. And so basically what we're talking about is a situation where large corporations who make lots of political contributions are in a position to basically dictate to local, county and municipal governments as to what they want to see happen. And then so it's going to be a huge land grab. You're going to see Monsanto grabbing land. You're going to see all kinds of TIFs for retail development. Tease Farms out here in the St. Louis County is going to find their land being grabbed. We might also see either solar or wind farms. I think folks may be familiar with the dirty stuff that's been going on with the wind farms solar farms out west, where Democrat donors are basically buying the politicians to kick cattle ranchers off the land. And so it just actually, to be frank with you, I am absolutely astonished that Republicans would even put something like this on the ballot. It's flabbergasting, and it really and the people in the Republican Party who are promoting this, they need a good slap upside the head.
I agree.
And I noticed one of the people was concerned about things. Another rumor that's been floating around about this bill is that it might prevent the Humane Society or PETA from bothering farmers. Well, it's not. That's not even addressed in this. PETA's going to do what it's going to do, and Humane Society is going to still continue doing what it's going to do. But the monies that they donate might encourage local governments to enact arbitrary or capricious restrictions on farms, which are going to be really hard to fight because, your government has a constitutional right to do this, and you don't have a constitutional right to defend yourself.
Well, Randy, can you address the question of rights? Because David just explained the right to do this and the right to do that. I am perplexed that a lot of people feel we need to put a right in the Constitution. I don't even get that, because if it's in the Constitution, it's given to you by government. If government can give it, God can take it. Government can take it away. What is a right, and what is the place of putting it in a state constitution?
Well,
I think you pretty well summed it up. But, you know, what people don't understand is the difference between rights and privileges. And a right is something that you have, and a privilege is something that's licensed out. And basically what happens is the governments that, you know, do enact laws are, you know, developing a system of privileges that they can relegate out. Yeah, I think we do ourselves a little bit of a disservice by saying the government issues us rights and that sort of thing, because they can never issue what is rightfully ours, but they can relegate these rights to being privileges. And a privilege, you know, like, for instance, a driver's license. You know, right, driver's license is has been relegated to being a privilege. You have a privilege to drive on these roads. Now, there are people that will make the argument that, hey, look, this is not, quote-unquote, government land. I have a right to drive upon it. And so people need to really understand the delineation there between what a right and a privilege is. And what they're doing is they are taking people's rights away to farm and relegating it to a privilege that they can then regulate. And I think that's an important distinction that people need to understand.
Randy, the name,
I agree.
The name of the bill is Right to Farm. And I believe that's where people are getting confused, because,
yeah,
you know.
Absolutely.
Well, can I say something here, Cynthia?
Yes.
So as with many of these kinds of initiatives, and we've seen many of, the wording is very deceptive. Actually, it's this is the right for local governments to do whatever they want to do with farms. That's the way it really should be titled. But also, if I could I ask a favor, and if I could digress just for about a minute and a half about Amendment 7, since this is the last show before the big vote?
Go ahead, digress.
Okay. The Amendment 7 is the road tax, and this is another disaster that's coming down the pike. And again, you know, Republicans need a good spanking for putting this out. Yeah, and what this road tax would do is, first of all, there's a rumor floating around that new taxes have to be enacted at the constitutional level, and that's absolutely false. Any new tax can be enacted by a referendum. And the key to the big mistake in this is they're calling it a temporary tax. The problem is the constitutional amendment is not temporary. It can only be removed by another or modified by another constitutional amendment. So it is a permanent tax.
Yeah.
So right there, the language is misleading. If it is passed, the legislature cannot modify or redirect the revenue stream. It's a straight-through entitlement to roads. And the monies that come through this would fall outside the calculations for the Hancock Amendment. So, in other words, it's a way of taxing everybody in the state of Missouri without it being calculated against Hancock. And I think, this is very similar to what's been going on in California, where the legislature is hamstrung by all these constitutional amendments, and the entire state of California is out of control, and the legislature can't do anything about it. And the last thing we want to do is to replicate the California model here in Missouri.
And yet, Randy, yeah, David, let me just remind you of something. California is run by Democrats. Washington State is run by Democrats. Illinois is run by Democrats. Sorry
right.
to make anybody feel bad,
and that,
but we're running by – this is Missouri, for
well,
goodness sake. We're run
points.
By Republicans.
Well, this is one of my points. Why are Missouri Republicans acting like California Democrats? I'm begging for an answer to that. And And then politically, I mean, just as a structural fact, you know, Republicans just passed a 5% personal tax decrease and a 25% corporate tax cut. Now, if the state really needed more money, why did they pass that?
Well,
And well, another reason for doing this, for opposing it, is Missouri's wasting three times the $480 million on welfare fraud. Why aren't they cleaning that up if they really need money? Let's do some cleanup here. And the last reason, and I promise to keep it short, the last reason for voting no is this is going to be handled just like when the lottery was enacted. When that was enacted, the first thing the governor did was figure out how much money the state was going to get from the governor, from the lottery, and that was John Ashcroft at the time. And within 30 days, he issued an order backing that amount out of the contribution from the general revenue fund to education. So in essence, what happened was it didn't result in any more money for education. It just resulted in more free money that the legislature can play with. So in the end, what will happen with this is we won't end up with any more money for roads. So, so Amendments 1 and 7 are the two boingers, and everybody should vote no.
Thank you. David, are you saying that we're not going to end up with more money for roads? We're going to end up with more money for what?
Well, it'll be more play money in the general revenue fund, which will probably get blown out on social expenditures. That's traditionally what's been happening with the Missouri budget over the last 30 years is social expenditures just keep growing and growing and growing, and they keep shrinking everything else. Back in 1970, you could go to University of Missouri Columbia for free. You just had to pay your own rent. You had to have an apartment. But you could go for free. And the reason why colleges now cost a small fortune is because over a period of time, the state said, well, we have to spend the money on all these welfare problems. And both Democrats and Republicans went along with this. So they took the money from schools and said, well, we're going to start charging fees for kids to go to schools. And here we are today where an average low-income family cannot get the money to get a college education so that they can break out of poverty and achieve some kind of upward mobility. And it just appalls me that Republicans are doing things like this.
What's the answer?
The Constitution Party.
Vote no on Amendments 1 and 7, and tell all your friends.
You didn't say anything about the veteran lottery amendment, but since you digressed.
Oh, yeah, that's also that's also a huge no, too.
Yes,
and
I agree.
For the same reasons, it's not going to result in any more money for veterans. It'll just be they will, just like they did with the lottery, it'll just be more slush money in the general revenue fund. And so, again, I forgot about the Veterans Amendment. But, yeah, that's the third one. These are and I think this presents an interesting topic about, what the heck are Republicans doing with three amendments like this? It's
well,
crazy.
Cynthia, can we weigh in on five?
Yes, please, weigh in, please.
Okay, the most troubling aspect of that amendment is the addition of the language of the mental illness part of it. I'm very, very disturbed by that part of it, and that's opening a door. It's like a Pandora's box that we're opening. Mental illness disorders right now, the American Psychiatric Association has defined 312 different mental disorders, one of them being caffeine withdrawal. Now, can you imagine having yourself withdrawing from caffeine and then being denied a gun? I mean, I know that's really far-fetched, but don't you think at times that the people in Russia and China and Cuba and other places where you have a government that was willing to declare people mentally ill for disagreeing with the a government.
Cindy, let me give
everybody...
Does anybody
else have a problem with this, or is this just me?
Well, Cindy, let me read a little bit for everybody's benefit, because even though you have it memorized as Amendment 5, some of our listeners may not be aware of what you're talking about. So, in Missouri, on the ballot, next Tuesday, there's going to be an amendment that changes our gun laws. And for your benefit, I'd like to read what that changes. It says, the right of every citizen to keep and bear arms. That's in current language, and the added language is ammunition and accessories typical to the normal function of such arms in defense of his home, person, family, and property, or when lawfully summoned to the aid of civil power, shall not be questioned. Now, here's the new language that's being added. That was what we already have. The ballot question is, shall we add this language? The rights guaranteed by this section shall be unalienable. Any restriction on these rights shall be subject to strict scrutiny, and the state of Missouri shall be obligated to uphold these rights and shall under no circumstances decline to protect against their infringement. So far, so good, folks. But... the next sentence ruins it. It adds, nothing in this section shall be construed to prevent the General Assembly from enacting general laws which limit the rights of convicted violent felons or those duly adjudged mentally infirm by a court of competent jurisdiction. What do you think they mean by that?
Hey, Cynthia, all I can tell you is Missouri finally learned from Illinois. There's the Illinois Constitution, you know, first of all, people need to understand what's the purpose of a Constitution. And really, the we all recognize, at least within the Constitution Party, is the Constitution is supposed to be a limiting document. It limits the power of the government from overreaching powers that it should not have in a free society. And the state of Illinois' constitution has a lot of good parts to it, but the evil part that destroys everything says that nothing in this constitution shall be construed as limiting the power of the legislature, quote unquote.
Dave Usher, can I jump in on this?
Yes.
I'm not sure that this is really a showstopper, you know, because, you know, they're not saying that social services can just decide that you can't have a gun because they think they don't like you for some reason. In other words, you know, social workers aren't going to be making this decision. The onus is on a prosecutor or somebody else to take it to a real live court who then decides if you're nuts or not. And I think, you know, what they're getting at is, in particular, is a lot of the mass school shootings that have occurred all around the country. There's a big pattern here. It's usually really messed up boys from broken families, you know, outside of marriage, who the schools have bugged them. They've been on a lot of drugs, and they're base, you know, they play a lot of violent games, and they just go off the rails. And people know that these kids are troubled children, and so I think what they're trying to do is to do things to try and guns away from people who really are known to be a threat. And so I'm not sure that this is a showstopper.
Well, David, can I just jump in here for a second and ask a question of you? Is there anything in this language or anything that a court can do in this amendment that could actually really stop a mentally disturbed person from attaining a gun?
Well, if court... issues an order saying that, that,
well,
you,
I mean,
that, you,
that,
that you're not supposed to have a gun.
Well, I mean, would that stop this person, though, really? I mean,
well,
can anybody stop another person from getting a gun, no matter what a law or what a court says?
Well, it'll make it harder. I mean, you could always
make it harder, but that's it.
Well,
but
you know,
could this not then? Can we actually trust judges and courts to honestly render fair and unbalanced opinions? When you think back, David, you sound like you've been around before. What about the MIAC report back in 2009, when the Missouri Highway Patrol issued a report that was sent to all the law enforcement officials in the state of Missouri, particularly warning them that there were certain peoples and certain groups that were a danger to law enforcement and just a danger, period. You know, some of the people that were named in that were people who were against abortion, people that were Second Amendment supporters, people who were members of the Constitution Party, Libertarian Party, people who had particular signs or flags like the Don't Tread on Me, were being named and identified to all law enforcement in Missouri as dangerous people and a threat. Now, with that, don't you think that we should be concerned that all of a sudden rights to own a gun, if anyone has been judged to have a mental disorder or mental infirmity, when countries before have considered people who are dissidents to the government as being a danger to that government? Can you not see that this could possibly go down that slippery slope?
Well, I would have to, first of all, let me say that I've got more corrupt judges off the bench than anybody else in the whole state of Missouri. I've got four of them off the bench, and but I'm not going to name their names because otherwise they could sue me for loss of income.
Right.
But so I'm very intimately aware of the vagaries that can and sometimes too frequently do occur in the court system. My question is under what context could you bring an action to a civil court to get somebody declared mentally ill? You know, is that within the context of crime, or could the city attorney, like say the police, and are usually in bed with the city attorney? Could the city attorney file a civil court action saying that we don't like this person and we think they're mentally ill? And but, you know, I think that would occur at some cost.
Well, I mean, those types of things are actually happening all over the United States right now. Those exact situations where local authorities are, divorce cases.
Well, this is
a person who was actually, this is a real case, a person who was in financial problems and very stressed out and very upset about it. They actually came and took his guns away from him. The local county authorities did, the local sheriff. Now, this is without a court order. Now, I don't know, I can't believe they had to give it back to him, but these types of things are already happening, and I'm concerned that now
we are
injecting this type of language into an amendment that is now, you know, I'm sorry, it just concerns me.
Well, I think, you know, this is a very deep subject, but let me say this, is that we have had unbelievable restrictions on guns for many years, going back to 1996.
Absolutely.
with Republican welfare reforms. Anybody who gets behind on child support in the amount of $5,000 or 6 months, any amount that's overdue by 6 months, can be declared a felon in the state of Missouri and also at the federal level, and when that happens, they lose their right to bear a gun. And
right,
there are a number of many police officers, actually, in St. Louis County, and I know some of them who have supported my work over the years, They had to take desk jobs because they can no longer carry a gun. They got behind on their child support. Now, since when does getting behind on child support constitute a right to take away a gun? This has been going on for close to 20 years now. And I didn't hear anybody screaming about that. So, you know.
Well, once again, do you think those things are somewhat, you know, I mean, Judy mentioned this before. We've got
to see. Well, here's my point. Here's
my point. We don't
know
these.
Here's my point. With the child support, there is no adjudication of whether or not you should or should not be able to have a gun. If you, it's a status offense. You become behind on child support, you cannot have a gun. There's no adjudication of whether or not you should or should not have a gun based on the issues at hand. Here, at least, you know, the court has to look at it and say, gee, is this guy really nuts or not? And you're going to probably have to get MMPIs on the person and get professional testimony from a psychiatrist on whether or not somebody really represents a threat. And it's not going to be like they do in Russia, where, you know, anybody they don't like, some bureaucrat just declares them mentally incompetent and then they get sent to Siberia. You know, this is not that style of legislation. So while I don't like this, I don't think it's a showstopper. That's all I'm saying. I think they're, you know, it's questionable, but I don't see this as being a visceral threat to the right to own a weapon. And I'll just say right up front, I don't own any guns, but then I don't need to because I use psychology. I've learned how to disarm people using words. And I have been threatened and attacked by people with brass knuckles, and I talked them out of it just by... And here's one of my tricks. I'll share it with you. Three guys come up with brass knuckles, and they were going to beat the heck out of me. And I just looked at one of them. I said, I remember you from high school. Remember that time that we went out for, you know, for a joyride, and we went and got really drunk? You know, something that any of those crazy people have done. And they looked at me, and they, you know, see, criminals don't hurt people that they know. And so these guys just, they changed their whole game, and I said, and so I just put my arm around them, and I said, hey, let's go get a beer. And they said, fine, where do you want to go? And so I picked a bar, and so they got in their car, and they went to the bar, and I got in my car and went home. So, you know, there's more than one way to do things, and I tend to do things using psychological ammunition. I'm real good at that.
This is Randy, if I can. My input would be, and I think this is where the word, again, and I think it's apropos to the situation here, is that it's a slippery slope. They get one little piece in that now they can have a court that makes a decision based upon some objective or subjective, whichever word it is, determination as to whether you have the mental capacity to responsibly have a firearm. And I just to make the point here is I was in the Marine Corps when don't ask, don't tell was the operative word. And I will tell you that there was a lot of angry people that became the policy of the day. Seems somewhat benign and all of that, but I will tell you that was just the next step to take the next step of totally inundating the military with homosexuals. So I think the point to be made here is while there's certain, and I think, you know, I think we're talking about kind of the same thing with the farm bill here, is that, you know, it becomes a slippery slope. What's the next step and that sort of stuff? And I think that's really what we're talking about here is that's a very, very dangerous next step to give the government that kind of authority to make those kind of decisions, as we know that I don't think any of us here on this call could say that we really trust our government to make the right choices. So I think that's where, you know, the point is it's just another one in the negative direction.
Judy, do you have an opinion on the gun amendment?
Well, in my eyes, it sets up the veterans to be unfairly targeted, because practically every veteran that comes out of service is almost invariably told they have PTSD, whether they know it or not. And I see that as, if you have the wrong person in an administrative position, in a yes-no position, or you have someone that has an axe to grind and knows maybe this individual did at one time have some issues. It could have been years and years ago, and they may be perfectly fine now. They could be targeted. What about a young mother that suffers from postpartum depression 15 years ago and comes up on a record? Our records aren't nearly as sealed and sacred as we think they are. We applied for health insurance a few years ago, and it came up that I had a condition that was associated with a pregnancy 20 years prior. I was perfectly fine. It shouldn't have been able to go back that far, but it did. And so I was denied coverage, and I was the healthiest one that was applying for the coverage at the time. So I'm a little nervous with the way this one is done, and I feel like the veterans particularly are at risk just because of the pushing of the PTSD diagnosis. And it'll be a vote for me. To just kind of wrap up, for me, the only yes vote on any of these amendments is 9, and that just solidifies our right to privacy with the electronic devices having to have a separate warrant. That's the only yes vote for me, and I think that's the Constitutional Party as well as Locke and Smith's stance. And after studying all of these amendments, that's where I fall with my vote on these amendments.
That makes a lot of sense. I would urge everybody, the old expression is, if it isn't broken, don't fix it. When we see this many amendments show up on our ballot, somebody has to raise the question, well, how did our government survive to today if we needed all these new laws? A constitutional amendment does have the same weight as a law. In fact, it has more weight than a law. It is the new law, and it is a law that supersedes all statutes. So
right.
When it's so easy, and here's the part that scares me. Most voters tend to vote yes on it. They figure if they wanted it bad enough to put it on the ballot, I'll just give it to them. This is the problem we have created with low-information voters going to the polls. There are so many efforts to turn out the vote and to make it a moral issue that you should vote because that's your civic duty, and what we've gotten is a lot of people who are uneducated showing up in the voting booth. That's the most dangerous situation of all, having people come to vote who don't know what is right and wrong, don't know what's constitutional and what's unconstitutional, and don't know the benefits of limited government. Bottom line, and bringing it full circle to this Farm Amendment, the foundational purpose of government is to protect us. So when we look at this question, we have to ask, does this protect us? I don't see it. I don't see any of these amendments protecting us except the one that you said, which protects our electronic communication from search and seizure. Now, Randy, maybe you can comment before we let you go, and maybe you too, Cindy, about the constitutionality of the – we all know that the U.S. Constitution has in the Fourth Amendment that you have a right to not have your papers searched and seized. Apparently, there are some people in the government who feel like that applies to paper, like what's made out of wood pulp. And now that we're not using wood pulp for our communication any longer, the electronic forms of communication are not included in the Fourth Amendment. This should make all of us angry. Now, I'm not going to leave you angry tonight, but when you think about the premise of it, what's going on with that?
You know, Cynthia, one of the things, as I have studied the Constitution and I have made it one of my life's endeavors, is to study and understand what the Founding Fathers gave us in that document. And the most brilliant part about that document is that it is based upon principles. And it is those principles that we really absolutely need to teach and help people understand. The right to privacy is a principle that is applicable in any arena. And so it doesn't matter if it's electronic or otherwise, but the problem with what, you know, a lot of people who don't have real good understanding of these principles as established by the Constitution are not able to articulate the argument against it. And so, you know, you mentioned, you know, it goes back to what I said earlier, is that it's great to encourage people to show up at these meetings, but it can be very devastating to have these people show up if they have no clue as to what's going on, because they can be so easily led astray. You know, we've talked about tonight various amendments and that sort of thing. And, you know, most of us would agree that it sounds like, you know, the initial intent sounds very noble and very right. But when you start digging beneath the veneer of it, then you understand how evil it can really be. And so I think that's, you know, we've really got to get people educated, and it's a tough road to hoe. That's where, you know, my website is dedicated to educating people and providing, you know, original sources and all of that. And so, you know, that's where we really got to start rolling it out, is start educating people. And, you know, and I guess the biggest thing that I'm working on is how I can incentivize people to learn. Because if they don't have an incentive to learn, they're very comfortable. And many of our Founding Fathers recognize this principle that people, you know, are by nature kind of lazy. And when they discover that they can get money given to them, they are less likely to work for money. It's a whole lot easier to have the money given than to actually have to work. And we've got a society of people that are, you know, the incentive for them is to sit on the couch because they get paid to sit on the couch. And we've got to really help people understand the importance of what freedom and liberty really means to us.
Well, going back to the purpose of government to protect us, I want to remind all of you of how we are looking at a confused age, where not only are the people not sure what government is supposed to do, is it supposed to give me welfare? No. We're now watching government actually do things that are harmful. And I wanted to read you this one story that made me so angry when I read it. It says, while Americans in nearby city of Detroit, Michigan, face life in third world conditions, unable to even afford running water, the state of Michigan decided to direct its own resources toward cracking down on a small food co-op for having the utter audacity to provide milk, butter, cream, and eggs to people who bought shares in the organic dairy. The Michigan Department of Agriculture did this. What they forced the country, this is, I'm going to mute one of these noises, hopefully. Listen to this story. They forced this farmer to break 100 dozen eggs. Each egg, they didn't just let him throw them in gingerly. If it were my farm, I'd put them in the trash can very gently, and then when everybody leaves, we can pull them out. But no, they stood there and had each egg broken. They had to put 248 gallons of organic milk in a sprayer, and they witnessed the farmer spraying it on a field. Now, if this doesn't make you angry, it should. There's something wrong here, folks, because it's a colossal waste.
They passed a right to farm, too. So where was that farmer's protection? Where was the consumer's protection that bought into that co-op?
Right. And the reason, if you're wondering, why would the Michigan Department of Agriculture do it? Well, they said that the co-op contracts were invalid, and therefore, instead of being shared, the food was being sold. So because the co-op members had paid for their shares, technically the Michigan Department of Agriculture stole the food that belonged not just to the farming family, but every single member of that co-op. Folks, this is so scary. And the idea that the same government that's providing food stamps to people who they feel need food, why wouldn't they give them the organic milk and the 1,200 free-range eggs? If they really were about wanting to feed people, you'd think they would. Now, it would have still been wrong. But why destroy good food? Why not pay the farmer for the food if they want it and then give it to the needy?
It was all about control.
Yeah, and
not about what was right.
Go ahead, Cynthia.
It was you, Judy. Go ahead.
It's not about what was right or what was moral or what was just. It was all about control, and that's the duly authorized powers. That's the part. Who are we authorizing, and are you allowed to be in a co-op? This mother, may I, can I do, could I have chickens? Could I be part of a co-op? Could I have free-range eggs or whatever? When that goes back to the rights and the permission. And when we, the people, get enough and say, no, we're not subjecting ourselves to the king any longer, we fought to get away from that, we're going to have to get to that point. People are going to have to stand up and say no. And this is a particular example of what the right to farm didn't do for the people. And that's another reason to vote no. The cherry farmers, the tart cherry farmers, USDA informed them, there's too many cherries this year. You're ruining the market. 40% of your crop either has to stay in the field or you have to dump it. They were forced to dump 40% of their crop. I'm sure those people must have had some kind of a subsidy, or USDA couldn't have told them to do that. Become dependent upon, and agriculture has become dependent upon federal dollars and grants. Smaller farmers that don't take from that, there is no way they would have told me to have dumped my cherries. I would have been on the roadside, on Craigslist, on you name it, downtown, advertising my product and selling it. They would have had to have locked me up. So my answer to a lot of this is just flat no.
Well, and Judy, we understand the government coming in if they're making methamphetamine,
Absolutely.
If they're doing something that is evil, then that is the place where government can and should step in. This is not evil. So you've got organic farmers being forced to destroy the fruit of their labor, and government is not only allowing it, they're participating in it. There is a true betrayal going on, and it's time to rein in the bureaucrats, not the farmers. let the bureaucrats be the ones who have to be subject to some new rules, and that is, you can't take our food without paying us for it. And I just feel we should all be aware that when things get out of control, we need a vehicle whereby we can rein it back in. That is the purpose for the Constitution. And as I read this constitutional amendment, I don't see anything that actually protects the farmers. So when people read should we have a right to farm? Of course they're going to vote yes. They think it's three cheers for the farmers. Rah, rah, yes. Now, here's the other mathematical proposition I want to present you with. We're all going to eat the same amount of food. It's not like if we promote farming in Missouri, then it will become popular for people to eat. So let's all eat more. That's not still going to get us where we want to go. Yes, farmers are important, and yes, we love farmers. But this has to be something bigger than that for me to feel like I will give it my vote. Is there anything else, Randy, that you want to explain to us about the condition of farming in Illinois?
Well, I'm going to open a can of worms and then jump out of it. because, you know, this whole farming thing, you know, I said back, one of the things that has happened in Illinois, and there was a two-page, just huge, maybe even three pages in the local newspaper some years back when I was actually running for governor, and the article was about Illinois farmers who were going down to Brazil, clearing the land, and to farm down in Brazil. And, you know, part of the reason is because of these international trade agreements. Now, I had actually been somewhat aware of what these international, you know, like NAFTA and CAFTA and those sorts of things. These are also big players in all of this equation, believe it or not. And it was my understanding and my impression, based upon what I was seeing happen here in the United States, that these international trade agreements were being perpetrated primarily at the destruction of the United States. And many of you know that I had recently been in a documentary that I went down to Mexico, I went down into El Salvador, I've seen the economical conditions of these countries, and what was the most, when people say, what was your aha moment or what was the thing that really impacted you the most, well, I got to tell you, the thing that impacted me the most is that the peasants of these countries recognize what destroyed their economies. And the peasants will tell you about NAFTA, especially in Mexico. The agricultural farmers and all of that, they point to NAFTA as being the single most devastating key to destroying their economic, especially in the agricultural department. And so, you know, when the farmers can no longer farm down there, guess what became the cash crop? Well, I was down there on pot plants, that several acre plantation of nothing but pot to help the Mexican military destroy their cash crop, marijuana. And so when you understand that this actually has bigger implications, it's one of the things, believe it or not, it's one of the things that's driving this whole immigration issue, is because of these economies that are so devastated south of the border, of which the United States is somewhat culpable. And I just see it as, you know, the big rich corporations, for the most part, really having their sway. If they can, you know, get this legislation passed in Missouri, guess what? As you mentioned, these big corporations can withstand some of this. But the small farmers and stuff, they can't. And so when you see it in light of the bigger picture, you know, I got to tell you, some people will say, Randy, you're just being a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, but I tell you, I have seen it with my own eyes, and all of this should scare us because the legislation, these international trade agreements and all, have destroyed these other economies, and they are working to destroy the economy of the United States, and I see it as plain as the writing on the wall.
Well, here's where the Republican Party really in Missouri missed the boat. If Republicans truly wanted to protect farmers, and I think we all know that most of the problems that farmers experience come from arbitrary and capricious things that the federal government does and some of these international initiatives. And what the amendment should have said is that before the federal government can take any action against the farmer, that it has to get the approval of the governor and the state's attorney. And this goes back to the governor holds a lot of power, and the supremacy clause does not necessarily give the federal government the right to come into a state and do anything that it wants. And before they make people dump cherries or milk or anything else, I think that it would be a very reasonable check and balance to get the okay of the governor and the state's attorney, which, if the government's on the up and up, it wouldn't take much time, and it wouldn't tip the farmer or anybody else off. Like, say, if somebody's growing marijuana or got a meth lab going, you it would have to be something that would occur without the individual knowing. But I think that even our Democrat governor probably would not go for forcing somebody to just dump cherries or spray milk all over the field. And by having both the governor and the state's attorney approve it, that means that you've got a legal...
It happened in Mountain View, Missouri with Morning Land Dairy. There was no state protection against those individuals. And
so if we had an amendment that said that the federal government can't make a farmer do anything and can't do anything without getting the sign-off of the governor and the state's attorney, that means that we've got an executive check and balance and we have a legal check and balance in place that in an emergency situation could be the approval could be gotten fairly quickly. In the case of a meth lab, it wouldn't take very long to get it done, but it would empower the governor and the state's attorney to basically tell the federal government, go home.
Well,
and
let
there wouldn't
me
be
ask
anything
you,
they could do about it.
Judy,
and that's
in
what,
the case...
That's what Republicans should have put on the table here.
Yes, I agree. But Judy, did we not already have a built-in protection for Morning Land Dairy that if the local sheriff had stood up to the feds and said, no, you do not have permission to come into my county and destroy property, if the sheriff's department had protected that raw milk farmer, would he not have been saved?
The local sheriff's department was derelict in their duty. They did not do their job. And the problem that they ran into is their product was exported out of the state. But the sample that was taken in California that they brought back and tied to Morning Land Dairy, they never sold the amount of cheese in that size package. So something happened between once it left their jurisdiction in their hands when it was shipped out of state. Something else was done to it, and that's what was tested. And that's where they came back. And then there was, when the samples were taken, there was no independent lab, and the person that was taking the sample on behalf of our state did not wear gloves and used improper techniques, and the Dixon family knew before the samples ever left that they would be contaminated by the poorly used sanitation methods of the collector that was taking the samples. So there was not proper protection for that local farmer from the sheriff and from the state in regards to their case. And they were so worn down that they gave in. And
they were worn down.
It's so unfortunate.
It really was sad because it had a sad ending. We all love happy endings. We want to hear the farmer be brave and strong and then have the sheriff come riding in on a horse and say, no, you can't hurt my constituents. Get out of here. You're not allowed to do it. But let me ask a question of the constitutional scholars tonight on our panel. Explain this one to me. What is the right way for all states in this country to protect themselves. If we're going to see constitutional amendments passed, would you advise us and anybody listening that the right way to do it is to do it based on the 10th Amendment, to say in our state we do not allow the federal government to come in and bully us on these principles? What are your thoughts on that?
I'll make a first stab at it. The first thing is that we need to have a whole bunch of sheriffs understand what their constitutional duties are. And
absolutely.
I will give you a situation where here in St. Clair County in Illinois, I had a van that was inoperable. I ran out of money to continue working on it. So I got it pushed up next to my garage where literally the only way that you could see this van was to be able to look straight on from the road to actually even know it existed. And one day I was just walking back to my backyard, and there was this bright yellow sticker. It was bright yellow to get the attention. And I'm like, what's this? And I look on it, and it is a sticker that was put on my van by the sheriff's department. Now, whether the sheriff actually himself did it or not, and apparently probably based upon some county law that they had passed. But the sticker said that I had to, my van was inoperable. It had a check mark saying that it was abandoned. 2 foot from my garage, it was abandoned, and that I had 7 days in which to tow it off of my property, or the sheriff's department would come and tow my van off of my property. Now, here it is. A sheriff came onto my property without any warrant to do so, put a sticker on my property to tell me to move my property off of my property. And I'm still somewhat inclined to run for sheriff of St. Clair County because we need somebody to protect our citizens' constitutional right to life, liberty, and according to the Fourth Amendment, our property. And so, you know, when we talk about it, we need sheriffs. Now, obviously, we know a few sheriffs in this country, like Sheriff Mack, who do understand their constitutional duties as a sheriff. And that's what we really need is if we need people, and again, it goes back to what I was talking about earlier, we need people to be educated about what the Constitution is all about, and we need to inspire people to understand what their roles are as citizens of this country and as officers of this country, those who have taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I'm telling you, there's a whole lot of people that have no idea what that oath is really all about. And that's where it really needs to begin.
That's a good word for us, Randy. Thank you for sharing that. And Judy, do you have any final words you'd like to wrap up with?
I say Randy needs to run for sheriff. I'm right there with you, buddy. I'm tired of being tyrannized by people that are supposed to be serving us. I'm in total agreement with Randy.
Randy, you're going to have to move to Christian County. Run for sheriff.
I'll be your campaign manager.
There you go. How about you, Cindy? Do you have any final word on all these amendments we've discussed and what's the right approach to them that you want to share with us?
Well, quickly, you know, to reiterate with something that Judy said very early on in the conversation, that citizens have to be involved. The only reason that we have any denying of our rights, restrictions, taxation, excessive taxation, every abuse that government is perpetrating on the citizens of this country is coming strictly because the citizens have stepped back. They're uninformed. They do not know what's going on. They have trusted people who should never be trusted. If nothing else, the founders told us to ever trust anybody in government, no one, that they should be guarded constantly. So they designed a system that allowed us to stop that from happening, but the missing part is the citizen. So citizens have to be involved if they ever want to do anything to stop what is happening. Now, electing the right people to office will definitely be a part of that. That's one of the reasons I'm running for office, is because I know that we have a constitution. It should be obeyed. However, we are now a government. This entire country and every state has now become a government of special interest. And we have to get people back into government who are not bought and paid for by special interest. And Jefferson said something, and it'll just be it's a paraphrase. It said if the people would be ill-informed, then it is the duty of the legislators to inform them and educate them. And what I see now is I see a group of legislators throughout our entire nation who have no desire to inform. If they really wanted to inform, then the language on all of these amendments would have been very clear. There's a problem right here. Ballot language versus the actual legislation that will be passed. Why do we have two separate pieces there? Why can't the people know exactly what it all says right up front instead of, as you said, the pretty flowery words? Of course everybody wants the right to farm. Of course we have the right to bear arm. But what most people aren't seeing is that there is definitely more behind the scene that, you know, may or may not be good for us. And I see no real protection on especially Amendments 5 and 1. And 7, once again, is very deceptive because it talks about fixing roads, but there's also a little word in there called transportation projects, which means in bike trails, greenways, things of that nature that have to do with transportation of people walking and bikes. I don't think that's what the people of Missouri want to spend their money on. So people get involved, support people who want to do the right things, and then possibly we can get this all heading in the right direction.
And Cindy, one of those other things it could cover is ports dealing with our navigable waterways and mass transit. Yes.
Right. Transportation is a big umbrella.
Mm-hmm. So from having been on the inside, I do want to share with you that a lot of how we ended up with all these amendments on the ballot is because every legislator wants to put something on the ballot for their bragging rights. Elections are always around the corner. Everyone in office wants to do some kind of legacy bill so they can pound their chest and say, look at me, I'm such a great person, I passed this, therefore I must be magnificent. So here we are subsidizing campaigns by allowing people the credibility. They're putting it on the ballot many times because they want to say, I put something on the ballot. So thank you for sharing that with us. David, are you still there? And can you summarize all these topics we've...
I can. My experience, and you know, I've never been elected and I've never run, and there's a reason for it. It's because there are a lot of people who go down to the legislature who go down with, some principles and some experience in their field of work, but they don't know anything about constitutional law. They don't know how to craft legislation that the courts can't monkey with. And they don't understand the hierarchy of policy. And so there are a lot of things that get introduced that, while they might be principled and they might be a good idea, they just simply aren't going to hold up in courts, or they're going to give the courts so much power, or they're going to give the courts the wrong kind of power. And I think some of these amendments, these amendments speak for themselves. The people who introduced these either didn't know what they were talking about, you know, how to craft legislation or craft an amendment, or they are being paid to do so by the dark side. And I don't know which it is, and I'm not going to go, since I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I'm just not going to go there. But so what I'm saying is that everybody out there, if you understand law, if you go go to WashU Law School and read court cases for a couple of years. You know, go study rules of court, study, see how the courts work. Go sit in a courtroom and watch some of the nutty stuff and the good stuff that goes on in there so you see how things work. If you want to introduce a bill, don't just throw something together and send it down to your state rep. You know, the good legislation comes from the people. It's putting an awful lot of responsibility on a legislature to craft good legislation, because they have to spend most of their time sitting in conferences and meetings and out on the floor. You know, it takes a lot of time to develop a good piece of legislation, and I know that because I have several statutes on the Missouri law books that I created. And I've got two or three more on the way, that at least one of which is going to get enacted next year. And, you know, I've got one bill that's taken 10 years to draft. And I've had constitutional scholars, sitting court judges. I've had a lot of people involved in this. And so those of us who know what we're doing, you know, you got to start out small. Pick a little bill and get that passed. Something simple. And
thank
let me
you.
Describe. Yeah, so, but I have great admiration for everybody in this call, because we do stick to the principles, and we can discuss maybe, you know, things, discuss how that maps into constitutional amendments. And
thank you, David.
Come out smarter than before. Thank you.
We are all smart. I think we've accomplished even more in our collective wisdom. I'm very grateful for everybody's perspective. Randy, I'm going to let you be the closer tonight. Sum it up for us. What is your opinion on all these legislative endeavors?
Well, thank you for that. And I do want to just throw out kudos to David. I don't know if he remembers, but we have been on the phone together with you before. And I just want to say that I really do appreciate David's perspectives. He kind of has the ability to say things a little more calmly than I do. I usually get wrapped up a little more passionately about it. And I think a lot of good things have been talked about, and some very important principles is, and I think you guys are doing a marvelous job about, you know, educating people what are in these bills. And I think, you know, the idea is that we really have to alert people to the slippery slopes when any time any of these bills, most of the time I believe that people do have some inclinations to doing the right thing. And you know, I kind of appreciate what David had to say about why he hasn't run. You know, I've known a lot of good men and women who I know in their heart, they said, I will get elected, and I will be the one to take a stand where all others have failed. And, you know, I can appreciate that perspective because I believe that's where I would be. I think the failing aspect is to believe that you can do it in the two-party system. And I think that's where, you know, we really, as constitutionalists, really need to focus our attention in helping people understand that, you know, the Republican Party is honestly, from my perspective, what we're seeing now is the in-your-face manifestation of what's been going on underneath for many, many years. In fact, we had a presidential candidate seeking our nomination several years ago by the name of Alan Keyes. And one of the things that he said, one of the reasons why he left the Republican Party is he said, I have seen beneath the mask of the Republican Party, and I can no longer be a part of that. And
thank
so
you.
While we, you know, it's important to understand that you guys are doing a marvelous job about educating, being conscious about the slippery slope, and let's really incentivize people to start learning all of this information, because all of our lives depend on it.
Thanks, Randy. That's a good word. Thanks to all of you. It was a lot of fun having you on tonight. You're a blessing. Come back again sometime.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.